Welcome to Show Me Something Wrong,
where each episode one of us chooses a movie to watch that the other hasn't seen. The movie is often wrong.
Often obscure.
That's the one. Usually odd. And always wrong.
Always wrong.
Always wrong.
I'm Dave.
I'm Guy, and today I've chosen the movie, and it is Hawk Jones from 1986. I haven't said anything about this film yet, but it just occurred to me as I said the year. It's quite mad that this was made in 86.
Yeah. That is pretty nuts.
Yeah. This movie, before I say anything about it, because it is most easily understood, best summed up by its tagline.
Mm.
Do you know what the tagline is for this?
I think I saw that. Is it the movie with the kids?
Yeah, the movie with the kids in it. It's like, oh, what's the movie? Ah, it's the movie with the kids in it.
Yeah.
And they just use that as the tagline. So yeah, today we're talking about the movie with the kids in it, Hawk Jones. So it's not a horror film.
Quite a big change from last time, which also was a movie with the kids in it, but much darker.
Yeah. In fact, we've done films with kids in them before. I think we did Blood Brothers.
Oh, yeah, that was a movie with the kids in it.
End of the Wicked, the other one with the kids.
But this is truly the movie with the kids in it.
This is the real like, movie with the kids in it.
Everyone is a kid. There is no adults.
Yes. So, as you said, this is a complete 180 from the ravishing grimness that was our last episode. This movie is not even a horror film. Just hearing everyone just turn off the podcast now. I'm not listening. What was the last non-horror film we probably did was Xuxa. We've not done many, have we?
Yeah, Fatal Termination or Xuxa. I can't remember which one was before that.
That also had a kid in it.
It did. But yeah, we always see a dip in the listens for our non-horror stuff.
Mm.
Except Miracle Buddy, which has very good listens. And of course, Dog and Art.
Oh.
Yeah. For other reasons, the movie with the dog in it,
or the bunny. Ah, so they like animals, but not kids.
Ah, that makes sense. I see. We've worked out the algorithm.
That's it. Next time we're doing Homeward Bound. With the animals and the kids.
Biggest episode, yeah.
Yeah. So this movie, the cast has an average age of 8 years old.
Mm.
So they're all kids. This is not a horror film. This is actually a gangster buddy cop movie.
Mm.
The entire cast is made up of children. So there's no bloods, no guts, no nothing.
I'm not sure if you're going to get into it, but do you know any other films that have a cast of only kids?
You know what? When I was researching this and everyone was like, oh, it's the movie with the kids in it. Mm. Everyone kept kind of referencing...
Bugsy Malone.
Yes.
Yeah. With, is that Jodie Foster?
She is in that, yeah.
But they're like, they're kids, but they're not as young as the kids in this. Like, they're like, maybe like 12 to 14.
Sure.
But these are properly little kids.
Little kids. And don't get me... Correct me if I'm wrong, because I have not seen Bugsy Malone since I was a kid, probably about 8 or something. And so I don't remember it at all. I watched the trailer for it and it seemed like there were adults in there as well.
Maybe. I don't know. Actually, I've never seen it, so okay. I'm not sure. But as far as I know, it's like all kids doing a gangster story.
Okay.
But some of them are like just teenagers, right?
So. Right. Okay. Yeah, I think I saw the trailer and there seemed to be like some adult women in like skimpy outfits, or maybe they were just big kids. I don't know.
I hope that wasn't kids. Yeah.
Well, we get some of that in this one.
Yeah.
So yeah, this isn't a horror film, but bear with us because kids do get shot and blown up. So I think there is something for everyone in here. you know, it makes me happy in a film. So let's go back to 1986. Which was the release year of Hawk Jones. So this movie is the brainchild of Tor Lawry.
Hmm.
Okay. And he came up with the idea for this film when he saw a Jell-O commercial on TV in which all the kids were dressed as adults.
Right.
And he was like, that would make a great movie.
Hmm.
So he just started to write this movie where all the roles are played by children. He thought it's going to be fantastic, laughs all around. And his brother, Richard Lorre, agreed.
Oh, it's a brother production.
Yes. So this is a completely family homemade production.
Right, right.
Now, prior to this, his brother, Richard, he had made some Super 8 films as a kid, but neither of them really had any experience in anything.
In anything?
In anything, bar these little Super 8 films that his brother made.
Right.
Now, the both of them were very young when they made this. It's quite mad.
Really?
Yes.
How young are we talking?
Now, a lot of sources online state that this is a film made by teenagers.
Right.
Yeah. But the director, Richard Lorre, he's gone on record saying he filmed it at age 21.
Wow, okay.
So who knows, pre-production, they could have started it when they were teenagers, I don't know. But even so, 21?
That's very young to make. And like, this film, we'll get into it more, but it feels cheap. But it feels quite big as
well. Oh, yes. Extremely ambitious.
It's very ambitious. The cast is huge. And, like, the locations are really cool. And there's a lot.
The props, the costumes. Sets,
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
So, for a couple of brothers in their early 20s to do something on this big of a scale is quite insane. But, yeah, as you said, their brothers, this is a completely independent family affair. So yeah, it was written by Tor Lorre, and then it was produced, directed, composed, and filmed by his brother Richard.
Right.
And all filmed in Illinois, and it seemed to be like a very kind of small town affair. So there's like these behind-the-scenes shots that you can see on YouTube, and all the locals are kind of like standing around like, what are y'all doing? You filming a movie? and it's all quite endearing. It seemed like they had a lot of support from the town, and I'd imagine that a lot of the town's residents' children were also cast in there. But yeah, it seemed to be quite an endearing, humble production run by this family. So yeah, as I said before, this is a huge project, very ambitious for a couple of brothers in their early 20s. They did casting and held interviews for over 300 kids.
Fuck. Jesus Christ.
Right. In the end, they cast 100 different children to play 60 roles.
Fuck.
So you have kids like doubling up on different roles.
Right.
But even so, 60 roles.
Yeah. That's a shit ton of kids to wrangle as well.
Yeah.
There are like, you know, there are scenes in this where I'm just like, there are so many kids that they would have had to have dealt with. And one kid is enough.
Yeah.
You know, as both of us know, we've like filmed, you know, stuff with we've had scenes with kids in it, and they're pretty tough sometimes. They're
pretty tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was watching this behind the scenes, and you know what? Putting the film aside for a moment, I have such respect for these two directors, because how fucking stressful it is to make a movie in itself, let alone your first movie on
all
this
kids.
Massive scale. And not only do they have to think about that, but they were essentially babysitting all these kids, because kids being kids, they just want to come up and chat shit. They don't know what the fuck is going on. So there are these like scenes in the behind the scenes where one of them comes up to Richard Lorre, and he's just like, hey, look at my Godzilla toy. And he's like showing him this like little Godzilla action figure, and they're just like, whoa, that's amazing, you know. And they're kind of like playing together like in between takes and stuff, so they couldn't even concentrate on the film because they had to look after all these kids as well.
Holy shit. In the behind the scenes, how big does the crew look for this?
Not big.
Very small crew. Wow.
Like it's kind of like their brothers, just the two brothers, and then seem to be a couple of other people. Maybe they were the parents, I don't know.
Wow.
But it seemed like a very, very small crew.
Fucking hell.
They were completely outnumbered by these little kids. So yeah, pretty impressive so far. But the most impressive thing here, and unfortunately one that raises a question that I don't have the answer to, is the size of their budget. They had a budget of $75,000 for this.
Right.
In 86.
Mm.
Now, if just to put that into perspective, if we adjust for inflation, that becomes about 170 grand
right.
in today's money.
Yeah.
How the fuck did two young 20-year-olds get $170,000 to film a film about kids.
Right, right.
Like, I wonder. It's just mind-blowing.
Sure. Especially, it's like their first film.
Yeah.
They've not got anything to their
And it's completely independent.
Yeah.
There's no, like, production behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck?
I wonder if it was, like, family money inheritance or...
Maybe.
Yeah.
But, fuck, if you were, like, these brothers, like, parents, would you sink 170 grand...
Mm.
into this kid, like, I want to make a movie where kids pretend to be gangsters.
Yeah, I think especially, like, yeah, knowing the cast is all kids, any investor would be like, fuck that, not touching that. Mm. That looks very, very dangerous.
Yes, yeah. And just to add a point to that as well, so this film is a film with kids, and it's made for kids. So this is supposed to be a film for children.
I was just kind of wondering that when I was watching it. I'm like, who is this for?
So that was the main purpose.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, who is this for is a good question. We'll get back to that. But yeah. So it just makes it even, like, less of a, like, viable in, like, investment, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so they chose to shoot an edit on a 3/4-inch tape stock. Yeah, so it's a bit grainy around the edges, but it kind of has that same appeal to, like, the shot and video horror style that people love and enjoy.
It's kind of weird, the look of this film. Like, it looks better than most shot on video horror. Like, it feels like I'm surprised to know it's their first film, because it feels like they knew what they were doing in terms of shooting it. Because even though it's shot on video, it's often pretty well lit. And the shots are, like, quite nice looking sometimes. You know, it's better looking than most shot on. It feels like it's somewhere between a completely amateurish shot on video sort of thing and a professional thing. It's, like, somewhere in some space between.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what their background is, but it seems like they had an idea as to what they were doing, like you said, because they had like, proper crane shots and everything, and stuff that I wouldn't have even thought about. You had to think about the camera trickery, because you got kids driving cars and stuff in there. So they clearly had a good eye, a good imagination and idea of what to do and how to achieve what they wanted to film.
Yeah, it's quite like that. You mentioned the car driving, like, even that, they have the green screen sort of stuff, and it looks better than I would expect from hearing about the budget and what it shot on. It looks okay.
Yeah. So, once filming completed, the director spent several months editing it, and just to make this clear again, this is a film for kids. So, when they finished it, they were like, right, now we've got to get it distributed. And they soon realized no one wanted to touch it.
Yeah.
Because all distributors were afraid of the content in the movie. Kids smoking, shooting guns, fighting, hanging out in lounges, getting blown up.
Yeah.
You know? No one was like, no, we're not going to put this out. And they were kind of stuck with it for a while. And finally, a small local distributor picked it up, released it, but they quickly went out of business.
Hmm.
Then another company picked it up. A couple of years later, they too went out of business.
Oh boy.
Now, after a long interval, the Lowry brothers finally got the rights back to the film. But by that time, all master prints were gone.
Right.
They'd been destroyed. They were lost. They didn't have a master print. So, the current state and availability of Hawk Jones, I'm going to save for the end, because that's another story in itself, and it's a very good one. But, yeah, with that, let's get into it. One thing I will say before we start, is there are a few different edits lurking around.
Yeah.
One of them I know the reason for. Other ones I don't. We watched two.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. Like, the first one that we watched, I was like, this doesn't feel like it's from 1986 based on the titles and some of the music in it. I recognized GarageBand loops.
Right.
So I'm like, this can't be from the 80s. And then ended up finding, I guess, the original on, what's it called? Archive.
Right.
What's it called? That site? You know, the archive site? Oh, archive.org? Is that maybe it? Yeah. So that has, like, what appears to be the original one. And it looks a lot shittier. Like, the print is terrible. So it's obviously from an old video. but I much prefer that version because it didn't have the GarageBand music in it.
Yeah, I have no idea where that other edit came from. Mm. But yeah, there seems to be a few different edits and cuts lurking around. I don't know why. So what we say might not add up to the version you watched. Who knows?
Mm. But who fucking cares?
Not this guy. let's get into it. So, as always, banging music. Isn't it amazing how a lot of the worst films have the best music? Yeah. I swear we say that about so many of the films we cover in this. Yeah, great music in this. Title sequence, Valiant Duhart is Hawk Jones.
Great real name. His real name is better than his character's name.
You should call him just Valiant Duhart. Yeah. That would be great.
We open in Minitropolis. Present day. I like that detail. Yeah, we've got a kid with glasses who's my favorite kid in this by is far. He? You know, the ginger kid with glasses? The
big goggled glasses. Yeah, I couldn't pick him out in any other role.
Oh, mate, but he was great. Yeah, he's one of the main kind of sidekicks of the villain. But yeah, he's opening up a safe.
Yeah.
And some other bad kids are watching. And then we cut to the villain, Antonio Coppola, name?
Yeah.
And he's just talking about how much he loves violence. Can I say, when I was like searching for this film, I found a really funny comment. I can't remember where it was, maybe Reddit or somewhere, I don't know. But someone was talking about, and take this with a grain of salt because it's an internet comment, but someone was saying when they were in university, they were doing a screening of this and the kid that played that role showed up.
What?
And he was just like some like stoner kid and then just told a whole bunch of stories about it, enjoyed the fame, and then went on his way again. How good would that be, watching this and Antonio Coppola comes in?
He's like, well, he's the crime boss, the mob boss in this.
And he looks so funny. He's got like a mullet.
Yeah.
And he's maybe, I loved him in this. Like, I thought he was really funny, but he's probably the worst actor as well.
He's not good, yeah.
Other than maybe Hawk Jones, the kid playing Hawk Jones.
Oh, no. Also, Valiant Duhart, what are you talking about?
I loved him, but
performance.
What a ridiculous performance from him. Yeah, he's this mulleted kid. He looks just so awkward on film with a cigar in his mouth.
It's a cigar. He's got this big scar down his cheek.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. Love it.
So these big goggled glasses kids are like cracking a safe. They steal a bunch of jewels, and then we get a long sequence of newspaper headlines flying towards the screen talking about a crime wave and a mysterious mob boss. Yeah.
I also love, we see at one point there's a house on fire. I don't know, I guess it was some kind of arson or something.
That was, wasn't that the museum? There's an art museum.
That's right, art museum on fire. But I love, we cut to like little kid firemen putting it out. Yeah. It's so great. There's also like a bank being robbed at one point.
Yeah.
And we see our first kid get shot and killed.
Yeah, he dies.
This kid cop comes out and gets shot.
That's right. Man. So yeah, police officer comes out and one of the kids starts opening fire and he shoots. And this is where we see one of the probably most interesting stylistic choices here. Whenever one of the kids shoots their guns, we get a little cartoon bang appear at the end of the gun barrel.
I love that. It's great.
Yeah.
It's a great effect.
So it kind of, tones down the violence towards kids. It does make it seem more cartoonish and child friendly. But yeah, as the film continues and gunfire becomes more frequent, we get all just this like appear on screen rapidly. But yeah, this one kid in the first opening minutes gets shot outside a bank, dies. And I'll tell you what, I was watching this in the airport on a transfer. I was in fucking Shanghai on a transfer, right? And I was like, I'm gonna watch Hawk Jones for some silly reason. And I was just cackling away. And I was like, nah, kid's dead, slapping my He's only got about 1 foot to fall before it hits the ground. He's tiny. I was cackling away in the airport watching this. And then we get the final newspaper article. Town hires super detective to investigate crime wave. And we know who that is.
It's fucking Hawk Jones.
Valiant Duhart.
I love this. When we cut into the next scene, it's like a very classic buddy cop 80s police station. So we're like tracking through the station everything about this is like any other buddy cop film from the 80s, except everyone's a kid.
Yeah.
And it's just such a great, great shot moving through. And we finally meet Hawk Jones, our hero.
Yep.
How would you describe Hawk Jones?
He's a little black kid with a massive coat and always has a lollipop in his mouth.
Big glasses as well. He's quite, you know, a little bit of a nerdy looking kid. He's a bit smaller than everyone else as well.
He is small, but he's very like cool headed. Yeah. He doesn't let anything get to him. Except for one thing.
Yeah, except one thing.
Which we find out now, yeah.
So there's two bully cops in there, bully kid cops.
Yeah.
Who are giving Hawk Jones shit, calling him a wimp with a badge.
Awful.
And then they make a reference to his mama.
Yeah.
And that is his trigger word.
It's not your fault, Hawk. It probably runs in the family. Your brothers are wimps. Your father's a wimp. And your mother's the biggest wimp of all, right?
Yeah.
Oh, what a trash talking fuck.
What a thing to say to a kid.
And then he's just like,
you say something about my mama.
And just before they're about to throw down, the chief calls him into the office.
The chief is great. I love this kid that played the chief. It's, yeah, just another kid, but he's got a little fake mustache on.
I've not seen a mustache this good since Werewolf.
Just a mustache glued onto him. It's great. But yeah, the chief is saying that there's a war going on. All of this crime wave kicking off. And Hawk Jones is convinced that, what's his name again?
Antonio.
Coppola?
Yeah, I just called him Antonio.
All right, Antonio is the cause of it all. But the chief is like, no, he's clean. Stay away from him.
Seems like he's being bought out.
Seems so. And he announces, the chief is like, you're not doing a good job, Hawk Jones, even though you've just been put on the game.
Yeah, right. He says his numbers are low.
Yeah, your arrest numbers are low. But you're going to have to work, of course, with a partner. It's a classic buddy cop move. And we've got his partner, McAllister, who is by far the best character in this film.
She's awesome.
Great. So it's a female cop and, yeah, her performance, this kid, is...
She's a sassy one, isn't she?
Genuinely excellent. Like, this really aggressive, sassy cop. Oh, she's awesome.
A lot taller than Hawk Jones as well.
Yeah, quite like maybe a head difference between them.
What does he say when he gets paired up? He's like, abroad!
Yeah. Yeah, he's not pleased.
I like the way they talk in this because even though, like, they're kind of trash-talking each other and giving each other shit, all the insults they use are very kind of child friendly, but at the same time they're very sexist and dated, it's something that you couldn't even say even in like a movie for adults nowadays.
It is kind of interesting, the dialogue, because it is playing on all the tropes of like an 80s buddy cop film, like all that sort of stuff, but little things are adjusted to be more for kids, right? Like the mama stuff, and there's a very funny running joke with McAllister destroying fruit and vegetables as a way to show what's going to happen to a bad guy. So there's like a lot of stuff that's very child friendly alongside kids with cigarettes hanging out their mouths. And
but there's a lot of like derogatory comments towards women in this. Hawk Jones is always like, make me a sandwich, woman. Get your hands off my car, woman.
Well, yeah, that's the next scene, right? Yeah. So they go off to get into his car and he shouts that at her.
Right. And hearing a kid say that is quite hilarious.
Yeah, it's really funny. Especially because his performance, the kid playing Hawk Jones, what was his name again? Valiant
Duhart.
He is... I really enjoyed him in this, but he looks like he's getting fed every line, bit by bit. And everything's kind of delivered very deadpan.
Yeah.
With this kind of slight scowl on his face. He very rarely smiles, but it kind of adds to it, this sort of
I think detached... that was the purpose of it. I think they directed him like that. Because in the behind the scenes, he's very playful and smiling and laughing around. But yeah. On camera, he's completely deadpan.
Yeah, it works really well.
Keep your hands off my car, woman!
They get into the car and they speed off in their car. And there's a great shot of they kind of like fly back into their seats. Yeah.
He looks so small in that car as well.
I mean, his feet wouldn't even be able to touch the pedals, would they? And then we get, like you said, the awesome backdrop of the screen outside the car, like rolling past as they drive by. I don't know. Yeah, maybe a green screen. Yeah. I was thinking could have even been like on rollers, like a rolling screen.
I thought maybe it was like just a projected screen, like maybe they've just got like a screen and it projecting onto it, but I'm not sure. But yeah, it looks pretty good, and you can't see any like green screen lines. So yeah, maybe you're right that it could be some kind of rolling sort of thing.
It looked nice though. I liked it.
Looks all right. Yeah, looks okay.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
For a couple of 20-year-olds.
Yeah. Directing a bunch of kids.
Anyway, they're arguing in the car. They're clearly not going to get on as partners. But a call comes in. They answer it. There's a hostage situation going on. And I think this is the best scene.
Yeah. This is my favorite scene. And yeah, as we said, we had two different versions of this. Mm. And the original version is so much fucking better because it has, like, extra stuff with this guy holding up the supermarket. And it's fucking very fucking funny.
We start off, like, in the supermarket, right? And the robbers got, like, three hostages at gunpoint.
Yeah.
And we kind of, like, yeah, one man, he puts his gun. He's like, which one of you am I going to kill first? And we kind of found the first kid is just like kind of a normal looking kind of fat kid, and then we go to the middle kids and it's like this dad kind of character in like a vest top smoking a pipe, and then we pan down and there's this tiny little kid who must be about 5 dressed as a grandma.
So funny.
With this ridiculous wig on.
But I love this kid as well who's holding up the place, because he just looks really uncomfortable on camera, and he's got this mask like over his face, which just makes him look a little bit cross-eyed as well. And as you said, like, everything's like a little bit kiddified, so he's like saying to these people that he's shoving the gun in the face of these kids, and he's like, if I don't get $100 I'm gonna start popping you off. Which is just such a great line.
Please, mister, what are you gonna do to us? It's very simple. If I don't get $100 in 5 minutes, I'm gonna start popping you off. Which one's first? You.
$100 is all he wants.
Is that killing for kids?
That's a huge amount of money, right?
Yeah. Oh, and he's so got good. This, like, ridiculous, like, drawn-on beard. And I think he's got something, like, in the sides of his mouth to, like, puff his face out a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's, like, I was trying to think why they had, like, given him this look. Because his cheeks are all kind of puffed out. He's got something, like, stored in his cheeks, like a hamster. And I was wondering, like, if he's supposed to be, like, been half beaten up or got into fights, his face is all bruised and swollen because it's kind of like dirty and I don't know. But then Hawk Jones and Callister pull up, start talking to the other cops that are already on the scene, and they're like, yeah, he wants $100 in 5 minutes or else he's gonna start killing hostages. And no one quite knows what to do. But Callister, she has a trick up her sleeve. A very unusual one.
An interesting trick.
Yeah. She just walks straight up into the hostage situation, pulls out a tomato from her pocket, and then just throws it on the floor, stamps on it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'm going to do this to your face if you don't come out. And that's when we get this great, like, close-up shot of this kid dressed as a grandma who's like... And the criminal, he's just like, okay, I give up. Don't shoot.
Mm.
And they'll start shooting him anyway.
So but he comes out, though, with the old woman kid.
Oh, that's right.
And he's like, got a gun to her. He's like, don't shoot. But then it's like, again, like a classic 80s cop film thing. Like, this one dumb cop panics and fires, and a huge, like, gun battle breaks out where we get, like, a relentless barrage of those, like, bang animations that you mentioned earlier. It's just everywhere on the screen. And my favorite thing in the whole film. Fuck, I just laughed every time I watched it. I watched this, like, 3 times in preparation, and I rewound the scene every time. two kids get their hats shot that's off right. the cops. It makes it 10 times funnier that there's two kids that get
their
hats.
Was it two different kids? It wasn't like a repeat of the scene.
No, it's like two different kid cops get their hats shot off, which is just really funny.
Normally it's just one. Yeah.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, anyway. The criminal kid goes running off, and I fucking love this sequence. You've got Hawk and McAllister chasing after him.
Smooth jazz kicking in.
Some rad cop music over the top. McAllister still has the megaphone that she was shouting with. And it's legitimately kind of great.
Kind of awesome chasing.
It's really
And cool. They're all shooting at each other whilst running through these fields and streets.
There's also a great like little tangent when they go through the car park.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
It's like a Scooby-Doo skit of like running back and forth between the cars.
But they go through and you see like a kid, like a car salesman kid, and he's like trying to sell it to this couple who are also kids. And one of them is like, well, Consumer Reports are saying, and he's like, oh, go home. Such a good little side act. Oh, it's great. It's excellent.
It's a pretty good chase scene. I liked it, yeah.
It's well shot as well. It's really
well
cool.
Well shot. Music's banging. Mm. I was totally into it.
10 out of 10 scene.
Jones chases him into an alley, but he can't be found.
Mm.
Bad guy then jumps out of a bin, and he has Jones at gunpoint.
Mm.
Suspense builds, but who saves the day? Of course, it's his partner, Cop McAllister.
Still with the megaphone, shouting at that cop.
But anyway, so they arrest him. Jones isn't happy. He's like, I had it all under control. He doesn't want to be parted up. He doesn't like her. But she's like, no, you owe me one.
Mm.
So they have this kind of like, it's classic buddy cop relationship. He's not happy to have a partner, but she keeps saving his ass.
Yeah. It is kind of funny how they've got you know, usually in a buddy cop film, one plays by the rules and one doesn't.
Yeah.
But in this, we've established Hawk Jones as the guy that doesn't play by the rules at the start. But then McAllister really doesn't play by the rules. Right, so they're both kind of rebel cops.
Yeah. Not a good pairing.
Yeah.
This is when we meet our mob boss, Antonio. And he's there. He has all of his goons with him. They all have like these drawn on beards and stuff.
Mm.
But this is the thing that I found really impressive about this film. All of these kids have fitted suits.
Yeah. Shit. I didn't even think about that. Because I was like, fuck, all these cop costumes for little kids are really impressive. I didn't even think about the suit aspect.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, they all look really fucking sharp.
Probably most of the budget went towards suits.
I don't even have a fitted suit.
Yeah, neither do I. It's expensive.
I know, but they did. All these kids, every single one of these little kids has a knockout suit.
Mm.
They look smart.
Whoever did the costuming on this deserves a pat on the back because it's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
like, all those cop outfits, like these suits, like it's great. Wow.
So Antonio's like, "What's this? I hear about a new cop in town." So he's on the radar. Then his girlfriend walks in.
Mm.
So Antonio has a broad. Mm. I forgot her name. But she's like, she wants to go to a bar, starts blowing kisses at him whilst he's cleaning his gun. It's a bit suggestive and a bit gross.
Yeah.
Not the worst scene, though.
No, there's worse to come. Yeah. The next part is also one of my favorite bits.
Is that the interrogation?
Yeah, so we've got the criminal who held up the supermarket. Jake. Yeah. Jake is his name. We hear it here. He's getting interrogated by these two cops who are not doing a good job. I fucking love the two cops interrogating him because they just look really happy to be in the film. They just look stoked. And the dialogue here is great.
Yeah.
So Hawk comes in and he's like, you know, what's going on? Have you gotten anything out of the criminal? And their lines here are great. Oh, so awesome. So we've got one of them who says,
he's clammed up tighter than a kid's first day at the dentist.
And then like the other guy who says a line which makes kind of no sense in hindsight, but he says,
give us a crack at this egg. We'll make him talk. You ain't getting nothing out of me, you hear?
It's like, but that, you've already been doing that.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
And it gets even better when McAllister comes in
and
starts giving it a go to, you know, interrogating this kid, and she just starts insulting him. Yeah. But they're all like real schoolyard kind of insults, right? Which reach their height when she delivers the line,
"You're so ugly that when you were born, your mama spanked a doctor."
To which all the other cops in the room are just horrified. Yeah. Like, it's like it's like she's dropped the word cunt or something, you know? It's like such a shocking moment for them.
They all have like the whoa face on them,
And then she takes out some grapes.
More fruit to squish.
That's her thing. And she's, she's like crushing them in her hands, like saying that that's going to be his brain.
But unfortunately, the fruit squishing stops there. They didn't continue it through the film.
They should have done more of that because that was very funny.
I enjoyed that, Then we have a scene with just McAllister and Hawk. And she's like, where are we going? And this is when Hawk delivers one of the best lines. He's like,
"You don't get it, do ya?
Get what?
I play solitaire, baby. I look after me and me only."
He's like, "I'm a lone wolf. I don't need you around." But I love it. "I play solitaire, baby." I never heard that expression before.
Quite good.
Yeah, he drives off, right, after that. And then this is like, in the first version we watched, it was then I realized that there had been music playing throughout the entirety of this film up to this point, like nonstop.
Yeah.
But you're saying those were all like GarageBand loops.
Well, yeah, I recognized a lot of GarageBand loops. So yeah, the first version that we watched, I was really enjoying it, but I'm like, fuck, the music sucks and it's nonstop. And then at a certain point, I recognized those sounds, right? And I'm like, this can't right. be from the 80s. And then the original version is just so much better. The music is very 80s, 80s cop film. So it's very fitting. So if you can, I'd say watch that version.
Yeah.
Definitely. Which was on archive.org. Hey,
I was thinking, oh, this soundtrack's fucking amazing. I was loving it. Best soundtrack since Ogroff. Anyway, so Hawk goes to Antonio's place. McAllister follows him. We get a bit of derogatory terminology thrown around here. He's like, "Why don't you go home and bake some brownies?" He says to McAllister. "Wouldn't fly today." But they decide to stick together, do a stakeout. But Hawk is a sleepy boy. He goes to sleep. Good old McAllister. She lets him sleep, puts his head on her lap while she stays awake for the stakeout.
It's quite a cute moment because it does just feel like two little kids.
Yeah,
you know, doing a stakeout. It's like, what would happen? One would fall asleep.
Yeah.
It's cute.
San Antonio, the gangster, leaves his house. He's smoking a big cigar.
Yeah.
He's got his blonde bimbo girlfriend with him. And this is when Jones wakes up and he's like, "What's going on, woman?"
Yeah.
And they notice Antonio leaving. Hawk follows them in the car whilst she goes to snoop out the apartment. And fucking hell, she has got the greatest walk
I was gonna say,
ever.
It's so fucking funny.
I was fucking dying at this. So she runs at a 90 degree angle, completely bent over with her arms drooping down, flailing them around. And she kind of, I guess she's trying to like be, I don't know.
It's like stealth mode.
Stealth mode.
It's so fucking funny.
It's the most ridiculous run I've ever seen.
I loved it. Loved it.
her legs are completely straight.
Yeah.
Straight up. She's not crouched at all. Her legs completely straight up, but she's just arched her back and her arms are flailing around.
It's awesome.
Love it. So yeah, she's gone into Antonio's house to find something. We don't know what yet. And then we go to the lounge. And this lounge is fucking hilarious. All the kids are drinking milk. They're all dressed up in their best clothes. And what's really fucking weird, all the clothes that these children are wearing, they're kind of like the type of clothes that you would imagine one's auntie to wear.
Yeah.
They're not just like kids' clothes. They're clothes for adults, but in kids' sizes. So really, and they have like earrings and big hats and stuff. And drinking milk and water and it's just great. Looks like they're having a hell of a time, but really, really out of place.
Yeah. It's also the whole, like thinking about the milk thing and also Hawk has a lollipop all the time. It is kind of funny how it's quite inconsistent, right? Mm. So you've got some kids smoking cigs or like they've got cigars and cigarettes and then they also have this milk and lollipop stuff. Yeah. It's like they couldn't quite decide what to go with.
Sure.
I also love, I don't know if you noticed this kid, but my favorite kid was the bouncer. Did you see him?
No.
There's like this massive, big fat lad with right. sunglasses just leaning up against the wall. And he was just, he was great. My favorite extra in this. We get a few skits in this club.
Oh, we do, don't we?
We've got a kid hitting on another kid at the bar. And she pours a drink over him.
Water.
But he genuinely looks like the shot of him getting it poured. You can see him like bracing for it.
Right.
And then he genuinely looks quite distressed after it's poured on him. Poor kid. We've also got Antonio's gal, his broad, just rambling for ages.
Yapping away.
With all of his lads falling asleep as she's talking.
What does he say to her?
Quit flapping your gums.
That's great.
And then my least favorite thing in this whole film, the kids like shooting each other, killing each other. Great. Love it. Drinking milk. Funny. Good. More of that. Cigarettes. Great. But I don't like the kind of creepy, flirty stuff. This
scene was, I actually found this scene quite funny.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of all trying to raise their eyebrows like a hey, kind of like giving each other looks from across the bar kind of thing. But these kids, none of them can lift up their eyebrows properly. So they're kind of just like pulling a somewhat surprised looking face whilst trying to lift their eyebrows.
So we've basically got Antonio's boys hitting on some little kids, some little girls across the room. And it's really awkward. But you can, like you said, they can't really wink and do stuff, right? But it feels like you can almost hear the directors directing them. So it's like, all right, raise your eyebrow. All right, wink. All right, flutter your eyes. Raise your eyebrow. It just, you can see every movement, but it just goes for so long. And I don't know, I found it a bit gross.
Oh, yeah. I can totally see why this would be really uncomfortable for some people too. This scene for me was all right. I found it quite funny just because they couldn't do it very well. Yeah. So cut back to McAllister. She's snooping around, finds a ton of cash and some files that are very conveniently named.
So good.
Hitmen, blackmail, banks to rob. And the best thing about this, it's all done in like child's handwriting.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
But yeah, she drops her torch like an idiot and some of the goons come to check out the noise.
Mm.
Cut back to the bar. And this is where we get the most upsetting, one of the most upsetting scenes, at least for me, the kind of like grossest scenes.
Sure. But before that, it's quite funny with that, the kid comedian. I found pretty funny. You've got this like kid comedian, stand-up comedian who comes out and just does like a really bad stand-up bit and everyone's booing him.
Why did the chicken cross the playground? To give to the other slide. Ha ha.
Yeah, he announces the performer of the night from Las Vegas, Pinky Toes.
Oh, it's not just that. It's Miss Bunny Boom Boom Pinky Toes.
Oh, shit. I didn't catch that whole name.
Yeah, the very grossly named Miss Bunny Boom Boom Pinky Toes.
Ugh.
Yes. So then we get a gross, sexy dance from a kid who's accompanied by a few sailors in sailor outfit, sailor boys who are also awkwardly dancing.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it's kind of what you'd imagine like a kind of a stripper sailor dance to be in a kind of this kind of lounge. So
yeah,
I get why they included it, but it's just not what you want to see.
This feels like, I mean, I haven't seen Bugsy Malone, but it feels like what I imagine certain scenes in Bugsy Malone is like, just from watching the trailer and hearing about that film, like they felt like they had to do that kind of thing.
Sure.
It's also, now that I think about it, it's really stupid and out of place, this stuff, because this is meant to be an 80s buddy cop film.
Yeah.
Yet all of this stuff in the club, it's only just hit me now, feels like a Bugsy Malone kind of, you know, 30s sort of thing, right? Like a big dance number that feel, and sailors and all that sort of stuff, like that doesn't feel like it fits into this genre.
Into the 80s.
Yeah, it was unnecessary, this stuff. Yeah,
this is when I was watching this in the airport, when this scene came on, I was like, just gonna like reposition my laptop so no one can see what I want. It's fine when all the kids are getting shot and dying, but I was like, oh no, this is a bit much.
The security officers come over to you,
sir. None of this in the airport.
We're gonna need to check the rest of your laptop.
Yeah,
see what else you got on here.
Yeah. So then Jones walks in. He goes straight up to the boss. The goons jump in, and the boss is like, 5-1. Looks like you're outnumbered. But then Jones fucking punches him right in the face. Yeah. This is great. Kid punching is the best. And he fucking knocks him right out. And then we get this awesome action sequence where he's knocking them out. He's picking them up, throwing them across the room. I love that.
The dummies flying across the room.
And there's this great kind of like recurring gag of there's a couple at one of the tables, and Hawk Jones just keeps throwing these goons at them. They keep landing next to them, like in this dummy form. But even though the action sequences are like kind of sped up, so you get like fast motion punches, their voices are also sped up. So it's like,
That was a great sequence, though. Love those dummies flying across the table.
It's great. Takes them all out like a champ. 5-1. Knocks them all out. Throws them across the room.
He's a tough guy. Tough kid.
So then Jones sits down at Antonio's table, and unsurprisingly, Antonio is running the mob.
Mm.
And he's, you know, they have a little chat. Antonio's like, you're fighting a war. You can't win.
Mm.
You got me. So another hint that he owns the Force.
Mm.
But cool-headed Hawk Jones, he kind of walks out with his little lollipop. He's not fazed.
Yeah.
But then we get wind of a secret weapon.
Yes.
Someone on the mob side. And Antonio's like, we're going to have to hire the Destroyer to take care of him.
Amazing.
Best character.
Yes.
In cinema history, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say.
Destroyer.
But we don't meet the Destroyer just yet. We go back to the mansion. McAllister's trying to escape, but she's stopped by one of the goons. She does a classic move to escape where she tells the goon that his shoes are untied, then knocks his gun out of his hand. What a move.
Knockout stuff.
Then back to the police station, and they're looking at all the files that McAllister has stolen from Antonio's place. And they find that there's like counterfeit cash.
Oh, I love it. Hawk Jones is like, this is good stuff. Yeah. And we look at it, and the picture of the president is this guy with like an afro and a big mustache. Yeah,
it's really funny. There's also one file that is empty, but it's called Project X.
Yeah.
Which is a hint of something we're going to find out more about soon. And the chief calls both of them into the office and tells them off for going to Antonio's place without a warrant. McAllister tries to show all the hitman contracts that they found, but the chief doesn't care. Then the receptionist comes in, and Antonio has given the chief like a box of candy as a gift.
But I swear the candy comes in like a cigar box.
Right.
Because I think the usual thing would be to gift a box of cigars, right? And it looks like it comes in a cigar box.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a box of chocolate. Sweets. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
So funny.
But yeah, they've been grilled because they went in without a permit. No good. Can't use it. So they have a little fight, and doesn't McAllister like just run off there?
Yeah, she quits being Hawk's partner, storms off, but then the receptionist is like, Hawk, I think she likes you.
Yeah. Aww.
Which I don't think we've had too much of. I don't know. I buy them being pals, but I don't think there's been a romantic thing that they've done much to set up.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, but then back at the mob boss's place, this is where we see Project X.
Mm.
So, Antonio has what is called a copper stopper. Apparently, it can stop any cop within 10 yards and turns them into, as he says, dead meat.
This, my friends, is a copper stopper. Any cop within 100 yards is dead meat.
So, he has a dummy, like a little mannequin dummy thing in a cop uniform.
I fucking love the logic of this machine. Basically, if you're dressed like a cop, you're fucked.
Yeah. So he's got this dummy tied up. He's wearing a cop uniform. He turns on the copper stopper, and it starts counting down. It's probably got like a minute countdown to it. Starts flashing, and then the dummy in this police uniform starts flashing green.
Yeah,
and turns to dust.
Yeah,
it just disintegrates.
I love Antonio puts on like those sort of nuclear test goggles well in this scene. It's great.
So basically, yeah, Project X copper stopper turns any cop or someone wearing a cop costume into dust.
Mm.
Pretty good.
Spooky stuff. Oh,
and then
boy.
We get the best character ever.
The best character. So,
and best introduction to a character
as
well.
It's so good. So we already know that someone called the Destroyer is going to be coming along. So two of the goons are going to the airport to pick him up. I found this stuff like kind of amazing as well. Like they've got a fucking plane in this scene. And they've got little kids pretending to drive a plane.
Yeah.
Or like fly a plane. It's amazing. The plane lands, the Destroyer gets out, and it's a really long build up to meeting him. So he's walking kind of awkwardly, and we see his like legs are like wrapped
They're
in chains.
Up, yeah.
And he's carrying this case, and then we finally get the reveal of the Destroyer, and it's so fucking like mid 80s. It's so perfect. It's like a kind of Warriors-esque, you know, apocalyptic punk. With this absurd hair and these glasses that I don't even
know
how to describe
them. I don't know
them,
what the fuck
but
they
sort
are.
Sort of jagged, like, shaped glasses.
It looks like, I mean, maybe best described as, like, Matrix kind of glasses, but one of the lenses has this big fucking, like, weird triangle stuck, like, behind one of the lenses. So it's, weird 80s pop. Punk
it's great.
Aesthetics.
It's so good. And, like, one thing I was thinking watching this, like, this kid playing this role, it's funny, it's such a great character, but he's very bland this role. Like,
he's not quite right for it. He just looks like a very average kid.
But the thing I love, though, I was thinking about watching this and imagining being cast in this film.
Mm.
How excited would you be to be cast as the Destroyer? Like, it's like the ultimate role for a kid to play. Like, you'd be just so like, I get to wear these like crazy glasses, dye my hair a different color, wear these chains and stuff.
Yeah.
It's the best role for a kid in the film.
Really is. Really is. And I loved the introduction to him. Like you said, that long build up, and it really reminded me of, I don't know if you, how familiar you are with it, but do you remember Con Air?
Oh, like the build-up to Steve Buscemi's character.
Yes, when he comes out the airplane.
It's really similar. Do you reckon this was an influence on Con Air? they saw that scene of the Destroyer. Like, we need to do that. It is really similar to that.
Because you have the kind of the reactions of the drivers and stuff and that slow build-up. And you just see the different parts of him before we get the facial shot. It's great.
So good. Not to go on too much of a tangent, but don't you think it's really funny in Con Air? I love Con Air.
That's great.
But isn't it hilarious that he's a child murderer, Steve Buscemi's character? By the end of the film, he's like the hero.
He's the hero, isn't he?
He drives off into the sunset.
Isn't he a pedophile in it
or
something?
Yeah, he's like a pedophile child killer.
That's mad.
And there's that creepy scene with the kid. Do you remember that? Like,
like,
that's so fucked up. But then he's essentially morphed into the hero.
He's
by
the good
the
guy
end.
Of the film.
I heard, like, from the making of that film, apparently John Malkovich hated making that film.
Oh, really?
Because the script would change, like, day by day.
What was his name? Cyrus the Virus.
Yeah, that's right. Cyrus the Virus. So he apparently, like, in the original script, he wasn't the villain. He was kind of like an anti-hero.
Okay.
Then he would change to the villain, and then they'd be like, oh, no, but actually, no, you're the hero again. So he didn't know how to play his character because it literally would change every day on set, and they'd have rewrites constantly. But fuck, that's a great film.
That is.
And that cast is amazing.
You couldn't make that film now. You couldn't have fucking pedophile rapist as the hero of a film.
It's fun.
That's mad. And Steve Buscemi as
Yeah.
He nails that role.
Every single actor in that is someone, right? Like, even the smallest roles.
Yeah.
You know, Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo. Isn't he another rapist? There's a lot of rapists in that film.
Yeah, well, they're all like grim,
they're
like
criminals,
hardcore criminals, right? Oh, man, what a great film. I've been craving to rewatch that, actually. I love Nick Cage
Put
in that as well.
Put the bunny down.
It's like that weird, isn't it weird? Like, I love Nick Cage so much, but it's so weird that he became like an action hero kind of guy, because he's such an unusual actor.
Yeah.
And he really flourishes in, like, kind of weird roles, like Vampire's Kiss and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then there was that weird period of time where he became that massive action star. Yeah. He did, like, Face Off,
Knockout,
Con Air, The Rock, like, all of those sort of films. Oh, what a weird time. It's great.
What a great tangent. Back to Hawk Jones.
Yeah.
Jones gets home and the landlord comes out. She's grilling him about being late on the rent, and she looks amazing. She's got all of her hair in like rollers and stuff. She's got a face mask on. Just imagine, looks like what you'd imagine a 40-year-old single woman landlord to look like.
Yeah.
But anyway, he scares her off by talking about spiders and snakes or something.
I found that really funny. Like, the delivery of that is so flat.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I guess I have to get rid of my pet spiders and snakes.
Yeah.
And then, like, she freaks out, like, screams. And he just to himself, he's like, hey, hey, Hawk, you devil. But it's, like, everything is very flat.
Yeah.
It's great.
He gets home. He's got a girl waiting for him.
Ooh.
She says, hello, stranger. And then it's, like, yeah, more sexy more kid stuff.
Lola. She's dressed up again. Like, it's in this
bunny boom boom pinky toes.
No, it's a different character.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it Antonio's girlfriend woman?
No, it's a different character.
Fucking
hell. It's a third kid. Yeah, because when I first saw it, I'm like, oh, it's Pinky Toes.
Yeah.
But then when I rewatched it, I'm like, no, it's a different character. Sure.
I thought it was her.
Pretty sure it's not.
You're probably right.
Yeah. I'm like, now you're making me question it, but I'm like 95% sure it's a random kid that's showing up.
That makes sense that it's someone else.
But she, again, is like, it's confusing because she's dressed up like a showgirl sort of character, right?
Yeah.
And it's clear from the moment that they meet, like in the apartment, that they were once like boyfriend and girlfriend, which is also creepy.
And fucking Jones's reaction, she's like, hello, stranger. And he's like, wowza, woo wee. And he's like fucking creaming in his pants. It's grim.
Don't talk about a kid creaming in their pants.
Cut that from the record. It's just the reaction is not what a kid would do, but you got this kid really, really overreacting to this, you know, girl who's scantily dressed on his sofa.
Yeah.
And there's something about this scene. It looks like they're just using natural lighting in this shot, and it's a very grim, grey looking set. And it just looks very dark and not very nice.
Yeah.
Dingy, dark. It kind of adds like this extra layer of grimness to it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a... All the stuff in apartments are quite, grim and gross, right? They're just very bleak locations. Yeah. They go to Mama Capone's for dinner, and this has some of the best exchanges of dialogue in the whole film.
The ice cream?
Yeah, yeah. So she's asking Hawk if he's got a girlfriend, and he's like,
females are like chocolate chip ice cream, cold and lumpy.
But then my favorite exchange, my favorite line in the whole film, she says to him, oh, when are you ever going to change, Hawk? And he says,
the day they nail me in the old box.
And it's just like so funny hearing a little kid talk about death, you know, like in that way.
The old box.
But then McAllister shows up with her date.
She's on a date as well.
And is sat right next to them on the table next to them. And immediately they start fighting. McAllister calls Lola a bimbo.
Oh, yeah.
Hawk calls McAllister's date a big ape. And then, so they're having this big argument. The staff at the restaurant comes over and asks him to leave or he'll call the cops. And they're like,
we are the cops. All of them. Love it.
Great stuff. Great laughs.
So now that it's like some weird kind of like love triangle, isn't it?
Love square.
More if you include the eighth, no?
Yeah, that's what I mean. You got the
square.
Yeah.
There you go.
I had to, in my mind, I'm like, what do you call something with 4 points?
Love square. So we got this scene that they're driving home and they're like, wait, someone's on our tail. And I was watching, I was like, please be the Destroyer, please be the Destroyer. And it's the fucking Destroyer. And we get this great car chase. The Destroyer has a machine gun. He's fucking locked and stocked. He's got so many guns on him. And they drive up to a big old, like, warehouse.
Yeah.
Destroyer's car opens up like the DeLorean.
It's so slow as well. Yeah. It's, like, really slowly opening.
Love it.
Yeah, they run into the warehouse, and it's just, like, filled with boxes everywhere. Classic 80s buddy cop film. Yeah. And, yeah, they're hiding behind the boxes. The Destroyer comes in, chains clanging around. It's, like, the worst outfit for a hitman to wear, because you can hear him wherever he's walking. And I think this was the scene where I'm like, what a role. Like, what a dream for this kid. He's got a big gun walking around a warehouse.
Chains, sunglasses. I had a friend, he always used to have these fucking keys attached to one of those, like, carabiner things on one of his belt loops.
Yeah.
And we could hear him coming for fucking miles away. And it's like that.
It's kind of, that's a interesting point you bring up, because this also made me think about my teen years. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was the same in the UK, but in Australia, when I was like maybe 13, so early 2000s, it was really popular to have massive chains connecting your wallet to your belt.
Oh, yeah.
And like the bigger chain, the better.
Yeah.
And I remember my brother took me to a hardware store so I could get the biggest, like a fucking enormous chain. And, like, we had a piece, like, cut out for it and attached to a thing to put onto my wallet. And it was, like, a fucking huge, heavy-ass chain. And because, like, baggy pants were also in my pants, were, like, constantly, like, nearly falling down because of this chain.
Doesn't matter. It was worth it.
I think the chains might be a little bit back in at the moment, in Japan at least. Because
I saw someone with a chain,
I've seen a lot of chains, which... I think it makes sense. Like, I think the 90s were in fashion for a bit, and now the early 2000s are coming back.
Yeah. They say everything has a 20-year cycle. It's only a matter of time. New metal fashion's coming back.
Oh, new metal fashion is so
really
back. It's really weird.
What were those, like, massive jeans that everyone wore?
Oh, yeah, like, with the big pockets on the side.
And they completely covered, like, the shoes.
Oh, ridiculous shit.
I want them to come back into fashion.
I think they're coming back, because I've noticed, like, it's just weird, man. Because, like, you know, that's, like, our childhood, essentially, right? And I've been seeing on, like, TikTok, like, lately, like, videos of people, like, I'm going to turn my car into a new metal car.
What's a new metal car?
Well, I asked the same thing, but I know what it is now. It's just got, like, the... You know, the flames, sort of black flames on it. And a big
chain from the side mirror. Yeah.
But yeah, like, all, like, stuff like that with, like, people new metalifying stuff. But they're, like, young people. It's not like us. It's, like, people in, you know, their early
20s. That's mad. Oh, how bizarre.
It's fucking weird.
But yeah, this Destroyer kid, he's totally new metal. He's completely vibing with it. Chains, spiky hair, spiky sunglasses.
Oh, boy.
Loves it. He would do well with some flame tattoos coming up from his wrist, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, yes, Destroyer waddling about with his big old chains everywhere in this warehouse. Hawk sneaks out from behind the boxes, and they have a big fight.
Yep.
Lola intervenes and
slaps the shit out of her.
Immediately slapped across the room.
She's out.
Hawk distracts Destroyer by saying, isn't that your mother? Is that what happened?
Yeah, so basically Destroyer has Hawk, like, held up in the air.
With his
superhuman child strength. He's got him, like, held up against his pole, and, Hawk is like... Distracts the Destroyer. He looks around, and Hawk Jones, like, pushes him back, and he falls into a pile of boxes. But there's this massive delay, so Hawk Jones is still up in the air.
Right.
And then he's like, "Whoa!" And he kind of falls down to this, like, really silly, like, cartoon logic. But it's great.
They run into another room, but they're trapped. They can't get out. There's a window that they try to escape from. Hawk climbs up onto yet another box.
Boxes everywhere.
Immediately, like, falls into the box, which is pretty funny. Destroyer comes in, and Lola clangs him on the head with a pot, a bowl that is there or something.
Yeah.
Can't really remember.
Could be another box, I don't know.
And yeah, they managed to escape. And I found this next bit a little baffling. I was a bit confused by some of the details here, but they head over to McAllister's place, who answers the door. Again, some curlers in her hair, like the landlady before as well. And Hawk puts Lola down on the couch to look after her. But Lola's, like, all fucking tripping balls.
I think it's from the destroyer slap.
Oh, okay. Because she seems sort of all right for a bit. But now she's just, like, she's lying down, but with her eyes, like, wide open.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, is she, like, dying or something from that slap?
Yeah.
But, yeah, they say that they need to stay there for a bit. McAllister and Lola start to talk and kind of become friends.
Yeah.
McAllister apologizes for calling her a bimbo. They talk about Hawk a bit, how they both like Hawk, essentially. And then Hawk comes out, strips off his clothes, and he's wearing like these goofy pajamas, and he puts on like this dumb like night cap hat as well. You know, there's like cartoonish hats. Does anyone actually...
I've never seen anyone wear a hat when they sleep.
Have we talked about this on the podcast before? Maybe we've just talked about it off pod before, but like,
have we spoken about nightcaps before?
I feel like we have, because has anyone ever in the history of humankind ever fucking worn a hat to bed?
You know what? Whenever I think or like picture the image of someone wearing like one of those nightcap things, it's from like a Christmas Carol or something.
Yeah. Or like some old cartoon or something.
I've never actually seen one in real life before. But yeah.
They're sort of in the same category as those, you know, those pajamas with the flap on the back?
Yeah, who are they for?
Is that just like so you can do a poo?
I guess.
Easily?
I guess.
But that sounds like that's opening up a whole daughter disaster there. Yeah, surely that's going to be hard work.
Yeah.
To aim your poo perfectly through that square hole.
Square.
Oh, God.
But there's that other scene, yeah. So they have kind of, like, come to the conclusion that both of the girls like Hawk. So then when he's, like, changing into his pajamas, they're both, like, ogling him.
Ugh. Yuck.
And then, he's in this, like, ridiculous outfit. He's got his little hat on. And the girls are just, like, laughing their asses off at his little like pajamas. Like, I don't know, they're like fucking Thomas the Tank Engine pajamas, something ridiculous. And he's like, women.
This next part was one of my favorite scenes as well. We've got Lola watching a soap opera.
I love it.
The soap opera is called The Young and the Playful, which is pretty funny. And it's just fucking hilarious, this soap opera. So it's like a woman whose husband is coming back, but he comes back with his mistress.
Yeah.
So it's like cheating kids.
I love it.
And like the girl pulls out a gun before it goes to the ad break.
If I can't have you, no one will.
Alicia, don't do it.
But you get that awesome like zoom in on the wife's face. Dude, I love a show within a show setting.
Yeah,
I absolutely love it.
It also made me feel very nostalgic for the 90s, like the time of like soap operas, right? Because I don't think they exist anymore. Like daytime soaps. I don't think so. Because who would be watching them now?
I don't know.
Like in this day of like streaming and stuff, they don't really have much of a place anymore. But my mum used to watch, what was the other one we've got? Oh, yeah, Days of Our Lives.
My mom
used to watch. That show was fucking crazy. Have you ever seen that shit?
No.
So there were, do you know about Passions?
No.
There was like, so there was a soap opera in, I think it was in the 90s, and they were like really struggling to get ratings. Mm. And they went crazy and they started adding in demons and ghosts and all this crazy shit.
Right.
There was like a little person in it who was like a wizard, and it was fucking crazy.
The title of the show was called Passions.
It was called Passions.
Never heard of it.
But because that show then got really big, all the other soaps were like, fuck, now we've got to follow suit.
We need demons.
And so when I was watching Days of Our Lives with my mum in the 90s, they had a storyline where a character got possessed by the devil.
Love it.
And it was like full like crazy exorcist shit and like bad like 90s CGI bats flying. And this was like a normal fucking soap opera. Oh, what a time to be alive.
Yes. Love it. Yeah, but the show within a show setting has always been one of my favorites.
Oh, it's so good. Do you have a favorite show within a show? I know mine.
Oh, what's yours?
It's a very obvious choice, but I love the Home Alone, the movie within the movie.
I
can't remember what it's called. Angels with Dirty Faces or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, the gangster one.
Oh, it's so perfectly made that it's great.
You know, I'm the only two examples I can think of now are not even like real examples, but I know you're not you don't play games, and neither do I really, but before I used to play a game called Alan Wake, and right. it was kind of like a mix between Twin Peaks and pretty much just Twin Peaks. It was like a game of Twin Peaks and the Twilight Zone,
right?
But they had this like movie within the game kind of thing, and you'd find these like TVs, you turn them on, you'd watch an episode of this thing, and it was all just really bizarre, and it was kind of like, it was just very Twin Peaks, David Lynchy. I always remember really enjoying that, and it gave you more insight to the story. It was very cool. And then another one, which is again not really a sitcom or film within a film, but you remember that scene in Natural Born Killers where they go into that sitcom setting and it's really fucking dark.
Yeah.
But you have that like canned laugh track over the top of all
Rodney
the really
Dangerfield.
I remember that scene was just like, oh my God. It was disgusting and shocking. But
so intense.
So like, but did they just capture that sitcom setting so well?
That's also it's so perfect in Natural Born Killers, because obviously like Woody Harrelson comes from that world of sitcoms, right? Of Cheers. And that the main thing I remember is when he enters the scene, there's like the applause for his character, and you see like Woody Harrelson like doing the acknowledgement of the audience.
Isn't he like the meat guy? He's like, I'm the meat guy. I brought the meat.
That's like my favorite ever moment of any Woody Harrelson performance. That bit where he like looks around and acknowledges the audience is just, oh fuck. It's so disturbing. Like to have that style with that. Yeah. Oh, Rodney Dangerfield is so creepy.
So disturbing in that.
There's like extended versions of that on the DVD I had. There was like more scenes of that in that style. Oof.
It's my probably favorite scene in that film,
because
it's just so like out of nowhere.
It's a
nightmare.
Yeah.
Anyway,
back to Hawk Jones.
Love a tangent. Back at the station, Hawk calls Lola, his girl, at home, but there's no answer. He's like, something's wrong, and he goes back to see her, and the apartment is completely trashed. She's there on the floor like unconscious, and Hawk is like, we gotta get you to a hospital, and she's like, no, it's too late. I'm going. Go. And then I think she dies. She dies on the floor.
My favorite line that she says as she's dying, she's like, forget about me, you big beluga.
Beluga?
Yeah,
what's a beluga?
Don't ask me.
When she was like, I'm dying, I don't know if she was told to say it like this, but she's like, I'm dying, and then pauses and she's dying again. I don't know if that's just the script she read verbatim, but
dying.
And then echoing she dies. Oh, and then fuck me, the next shot is her chalk outline,
right
yeah. And it's like a stick man with a smiley face. Just a smiley face.
Oh, God.
Hawk knows it's because of Antonio and his goons, but he knows that the chief is being bought out, so he has to take justice into his own hands. Classic move. He's like, I'm quitting the force. He gives the boss, the chief, his gun and badge. And his partner, Mikalska, tries to talk him out of it. She says, just when this town needs you the most, you turn your back on it. But he's a damaged man. He's got stuff to do.
Yeah.
And we know everything. And then this is when everything starts to kick off.
Yeah. So McAllister's sort of chased him, you know, as he's leaving. She's walking around in an alleyway. And then the goons pull up. Antonio's goons pull up and kidnap her.
Kidnap her.
Take her away.
Gun to the head.
Yeah.
And we cut back. Yeah, Destroyer's got her. He's got his massive machine gun held to her head. And isn't she, like, tied up in a chair or something?
This is where it gets a little bit messy narratively, because we've had Hawk make his big exit from the station. Then he's just back at the station, packing his stuff up.
He does do that, doesn't he? Yeah.
And he gets a call from McAllister.
Mm.
And yeah, she's being held hostage, the gun on her head, Destroyer with his gun pointed to her head. And she's trying to tell him not to come, that it's a trap. But then Antonio grabs the phone off her and is like, you're going to come and get McAllister.
This is where I totally agree with what you said before about his deliverance being so fucking cardboard-like.
Yeah.
Because he's like, he says, she's waiting here for you to come and get her. And then he goes, ha, ha, yeah. ha. Like, it's this really, really slow, solid laugh.
He's right here waiting for you. Come and get her. Ha, ha, ha.
So unconvinced. It's not even a laugh. It's just he's just saying, ha, ha.
Bad.
So, of course, he's got to go save her. But not before getting that sweet revenge on the bully. Yeah. He just fucking walks up to the bully in the
station. Him a wimp again. A wimp without a badge.
Whoa! Knocks him out. Fuck yeah, more kid punching.
Oh, I love this next bit as well. He goes, Hawk goes over to the boot of his car, opens it up, and it's just guns, grenades, a compass, another lollipop. He's like getting...
That Rambo's up.
Yeah, Rambo's up. Oh, it's so great. It's such a great, very 80s moment as well. So McAllister is all tied up in Antonio's mansion, and she's next to... What was it called again?
The copper stopper.
And it's set to a timer.
Yep.
So Hawk runs over to the mansion and we get this absolutely fantastic sequence of all the goons shooting at him as he's approaching the mansion. And of course, you've got the bang animation over everything. He shoots one kid with an explosive arrow.
Yeah.
Explosive arrow kid blows up one kid.
And we get this kills another boom and like zow explosions.
Kills another kid with a grenade.
I love it. So yeah, we get the cuts and there's just a smoke bomb where the goons once were.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this. So I was thinking at this point, so Hawk Jones gave his badge back. So is he immune to the copper stopper?
Yeah, I guess he would be. Yeah.
He's not in uniform. He doesn't have a badge. So
yeah.
But that was
he's fine. But McAllister's not, though.
She's still got her badge on.
But pretty easy to avoid that.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's not a very effective tool. No. Yeah, he manages to get into the mansion, and Antonio is just watching him on the security footage. Like, here we go. The time's ticking down. Hawk manages to find the room that McAllister's in. Yeah, Antonio's watching this, like, anticipating that they're going to be killed by the copper stopper. But then they escape.
Yeah.
And we cut to the machine, and his lollipop has been jammed in the timer.
Love stopping it. Stopping it from working. Trusty lollipop. So good. And then we get the showdown.
Oh.
So it's just guns galore.
There's so many good bits here, though. So yeah, all the goons like stalking them in this mansion, right? Which is such a cool fucking location as well. But this part, I don't know why, but it really... Mate reminded me of like playing a video game in the 90s, like just going around.
Well, it totally feels like that. You got the boss on the top floor.
Yeah. It's great. But yeah, the goons are just getting mowed down one by one.
There's this shot where
The ginger kid?
Because he gets the machine gun and he's just like,
yeah. That is. This is why this kid is the best kid in it. So this ginger kid with the glasses, his death is just amazing. He's getting shot with his machine gun and he's like bouncing up and down.
It's like jumps back awkwardly. Oh, it's great.
So good. Hawk at one point gets boxing gloves.
Yeah.
Punches out a kid.
Love it. Love it. And he flies into more boxes.
Yeah.
The next scene, somehow Hawk is in a toilet. And he pushes one of the goons into the cubicle, throws a grenade into there.
Yeah.
A grenade.
I felt like they ruined this scene, though, because I was like, that's so funny that he's blown up a kid in a toilet.
Oh, but then he comes out.
But yeah, then there's just like a shot of the kid, not even like, you know, cartoonishly blown up. He's just normal.
Yeah.
And all cross-eyed. Dazed, I'm like, oh, come on.
He could have just
had him.
Just if they just didn't show it, just him blown up.
Yeah.
Within the closed cubicle, that would have been great. But the way the explosions are shown here, it's just like a shake of the camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also see Hawk doing some excellent martial arts.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing some fly kicks on a kid, which is pretty funny.
Oh, and it's all slow motion.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like advancing towards this kid who's like frozen in terror. Yeah. And he's just like karate chopping in the air. And he does this kick and he just kicks this like mannequin over. Yeah. It's fucking great.
And while this has been happening, McAllister has been facing off against the destroyer, right? She manages to shoot the destroyer to smithereens. And then now, this next bit makes me think that maybe the destroyer is more than just a human being, because despite being shot like 1,000 times, he's still alive, comes back to life, starts to strangle McAllister. While that's happening, Hawk is having his own standoff with, what's his name? Antonio.
Yeah.
And this is pretty fucking funny, this standoff. So he's finally gotten up to the office, the boss's office, and they pull out, they have katanas.
That's some kind of sword.
Yeah, they've got these like swords. So we're cutting between we're cutting between a katana sword fight, which is not as impressive as that sounds. Like, it's very pathetic.
Yeah.
It's
like these swords. They're like really moving, like bendy, like flopping around swords.
So they're fighting. You've got Hawk and Antonio fighting. And this is cutting with McAllister and Destroyer, who are in like this kind of like disco ballroom location. I don't know
where
now
they are,
with all this like weird light going on. But yeah, McAllister has the, I don't know where it came from, but the copper stopper is randomly in this room now. I don't know how it got there. But she turns it on, takes off her badge, puts it on the Destroyer.
Oh, I thought as they were like rolling around, it somehow kind of got stuck to him.
I think she kind of takes it off and stabs it onto him.
That's right.
So then the copper stopper turns the Destroyer to dust. He's like all like,
oh, but this is the way it happens, though.
You get
this great like 2D animation of like flashing green, and then back, you see kind of his skeleton.
Yeah.
It's like Destroyer and the skeleton kind of flashing, pulsating back and forth. And then, turns to dust.
What a pathetic machine, though. You just put a fucking cop badge on someone and that's it.
Destroyer's done.
He's finished.
He's done. And then we come back to Antonio and the Hawk fight. Antonio seems to be winning.
Mm.
He knocks Hawk Jones' sword out and he says, "You're weak, Hawk. Just like your mama."
What a mistake.
Can't say that.
If he hadn't have said that, he would have won the fight.
Yeah, exactly.
But then, that's given him power, like spinach to Popeye. You make a mama joke to Hawk Jones, he powers up.
Well, he starts growling like a dog in this scene.
Yeah.
Literally, he starts growling like a dog. He knocks him out. Mm. And then he throws a knife. He gets a knife. He throws a knife into his chest. Like, it's full on.
It's
full on. He's there with a knife embedded into his chest. He's done.
He's dead. That's by far the most violent moment of the film, right? A knife flying through the air and stabbing into a kid. Jesus Christ.
They think it's all over. Hawk and his partner meet at the bottom of the stairs. Happy days. But there is still one more goon.
I forgot about this.
Yeah. And what does Hawk say? He says, "Get down, woman, and stay down." As she ducks, he gets one of his exploding arrows, shoots it, and it lands in the kid's mouth.
Yeah.
Right? And then we get this like ridiculous like camera shake and explosion. And then the kids just say like, "Ew."
Ew.
Yeah. So I think this kid is literally just blown up.
Oh, fucking stupid.
Chief is there, gives him back his gun and badge. All is well. Hawk gives the okay sign to the camera. Credits roll. And in glorious form, all the actors give a wave to the camera. Mm. And we get a lovely little blooper roll.
Couple of bloops at the end.
Post-credit sequence of Hawk throwing a box in the air and it landing on Lola's head.
Oh, fuck, I didn't see that. Yeah. I turned it off before then.
Yeah. It's in that warehouse scene. It's a blooper, but he throws it up in the air and it just lands right on her head. And that's the last thing before the film ends. So there you go. That was Hawk Jones.
What a film. I did love this film quite a lot.
Yeah?
I really enjoyed it. It's ridiculous. It really is.
I don't know, I enjoyed it. I don't know if many people will, because it's not like, it's not so over the top.
Yeah.
For you to be like, whoa, this is fucking nuts. Like, cause, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. It's not that level. But then I think, like, what's great is this film doesn't promise to be anything more than just a buddy cop movie. So it doesn't sell. Its selling point is not fucked up kids blowing up and shit like that. So
yeah.
It doesn't try to sell itself to be a fucking insane film. It's literally just a buddy cop film with kids in the role.
I think that's why it's better, you know, because it's like, if it was just like fucked up stuff of kids, I mean, that would still be fun, but but this is like quite endearingly innocent, but then it has these moments of just like, whoa, and it makes those moments stand out a lot more. But it is, I did find it genuinely funny at times, and I thought all the kids, especially the kid that played McAllister, were very fun to watch. Yeah, it's good fun. And I love 80s buddy cop film. So
It's right up your street then.
Like, the stuff I didn't like so much, the flirty kid stuff, could have done without that. And I think even just in terms of the style of the film, it's annoying that it kind of does that old school, like, Bugsy Malone sort of stuff in the club.
Right, like,
it's just kind of... it doesn't fit in with the rest of the tone of this. So even beyond it being a bit gross, it's just not necessary either. And I feel like it was thrown in there to kind of cash in on a Bugsy Malone sort of style.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I don't really know Bugsy Malone a lot, so I can't really comment on that. But yeah, the weird kind of the sexy stuff, the kids flirting and the skimpy outfits and stuff, I could definitely do without.
Yeah. I think we're maybe making it sound worse than it is. Like, it's not that bad. Like, it's like, it's just a bit like, like, it's not
unnecessary.
Yeah, it's not horrifying, but it's just a bit, didn't need it.
Need it. So there you go. So let's just talk about where Hawk Jones is today and the state of this movie right now. So I mentioned before that all the masters were gone. They'd vanished, been destroyed, disappeared, I don't know. But luckily, Richard had made a beta copy several years before and kept it in storage. So in 2015, so quite long after the fact, Tor had the footage from the beta transferred to a hard drive. Then basically he began the long task of revamping all of the visual effects in this film. Now, I mentioned before that this was a movie for kids. That was the intention of the directors. At some point between completion and it getting lost, it became kind of like a bit of a cult film with adults enjoying it because it's frankly kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Right. Now, this is just my take on this, and this hasn't been confirmed by the directors or anything, but it seems to me that the directors leaned into the fact that it became this fucked up film of kids killing each other and kind of changed their target audience a bit.
Yeah.
So now what we have is a 25th anniversary edition, and it promises to be better looking and more violent and a new Hawk Jones that a whole new generation can discover. So before, where we had the bang and zoom and big kind of like cartoony things at the end of the gun barrels, now we have actual gunshot flashes. And when kids get shot, there's like blood sprays and stuff. And there's big explosions with the grenades and stuff, as opposed to just the shakes of the camera. So I think, you know, with that in mind, probably the 25th anniversary edition may be more suitable for this podcast because you literally have kids getting shot and blood splattering everywhere. But I thought the original version is the one we should cover.
It sounds kind of lame to me.
It's what you said before. Yeah, like the film is good because it has those cheap effects and it doesn't lean too hard into being adult focused content, like with the blood and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's good because it's silly with the flashes and the shakes and the booms and the bang things. So I've not seen the 25th anniversary edition, but I've watched the trailer and it does seem pretty fucked up with the blood sprays and everything. But personally, I'm quite happy with just the bang flashes and the shaky camera stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, but if you are interested in seeing that one, you can get a DVD on the director's website, easily findable on a Google search. There's a DVD that has the original version and the 25th anniversary edition together. Mm. So it's a pretty good set.
I wonder what the hell that other version we watched was.
Yeah, no idea.
So confusing.
No idea. And that's that. Hawk Jones.
Hawk Jones. Do we go to the wrongometer?
I think we should.
So how wrong the film is, how fucked up it is, how much it shouldn't exist.
That's a tough one. It's not going to be very high.
It's not high, but it's pretty crazy to have a film with all kids and all kids class, all kids cast.
Mm.
But yeah, it's not. Yeah, there's nothing.
I was going to say maybe a 4 or something.
There's nothing super shocking.
No.
I was also going to say a 4 as well. Yeah.
There you go.
So it's it's nothing higher than a 4.
No.
It's worth a watch, but it's not going to leave you reeling like some of the other films that we discuss. Yeah.
So there you go. So what are we doing next time?
Oh, next time, I'm very excited. This has been on my list for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It is The Black Cat.
Nice.
From 1989.
Right.
By Luigi Cozzi.
Okay.
I have to give all those details because
there are so many
fucking movies called The Black Cat.
Yeah.
So just make sure you're watching the one from 1989. I think it's on Tubi, and there's a Blu-ray release from Severin as well. So it's very easy to find. I'm looking forward to talking about that one. Heading back to Italy.
Oh, hey.
So do also follow us on Instagram. We're at Show Me Something Wrong on Instagram. You can also send us an email if you want at showmesomethingwrong@gmail.com. And of course, please give us those sweet, sweet 5-star reviews on, what is it? Apple Podcasts and
Google.
Is that a thing?
I don't know.
Google. I don't know. On on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify as well. Nice,
yeah.
That'd be great if you could do that. Maybe there is a Google one too. If you can find a way to give us a review on Google, that'd be great as well.
That's what I'm looking for. Yeah.
Just do it. Yeah.
Just do it. So right. Ha ha ha.